Jiggery Pokery.
We should get that shirt made. That shirt was
Jiggery Pokery needs to be one. That's going to be my damn startup name. I'm telling you right now. It sounds like a law firm. I mean, the law office is Jiggery Pokery. It also sounds like something that happens to you or you do with a friend.
Yes, it does actually.
We went out and did a little bit of the Jiggery Pokery.
Or something that happens to you, like on the subway.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know which one of those words is better, the jiggery or the poker.
It's the combination of the
two. Do you want to be jiggered or pokered?
Or both.
Oh, boy.
Or do you want to be the jiggy or the pokey?
Yes. Oh, wow. There's a name for the podcast somewhere in that discussion.
In tech we trust. Charge we're not sure about.
Hello everybody and welcome to episode 70 of the In Tech We Trust podcast, and I've got my Skype screen up, so Mark, Gabriel, Lauren, me, no Rickatron.
Hey now!
No Rickatron.
Rickatron, where'd you go again?
The green guy from his Marvel superhero thing that he made last week. Yeah, where are you, Mr. Green? Never mind. Let's just jump straight into a bit of a news digest that we've got here then, right? So Dell announces Network OS version 10, a Linux-based network play. HDS announces an purpose-built all-flash array, the HFS A-Series. Oh, I'm crashing and burning here. Anyway, it's an entry-level system aimed squarely at the likes of Pure Storage, Extreme IO, people like that. Kind of switching to more business news, Puppet Labs. Apparently, they're no longer looking to IPO this spring, and they're citing current market situation as just pretty much not being advantageous for tech IPOs. And interestingly, well, I thought this was interesting. So rather than taking another round of investment, they've taken a $22 million bank loan. I want to talk about that. I don't think we particularly hear a lot of that kind of stuff going on. Hortonworks, shares down over 20% on news that they're looking to raise another $100 million via a secondary stock offering. Really, only like a year after its initial IPO. Now, these guys obviously play in the Hadoop big data analytics space. And I don't know if I'm reading too much into that, but I'm wondering if that's saying things are not going so well for them and whether or not that's an indication of that market. I don't know. Maybe worth a discussion. Or, hey, not to rail on IBM too much again, but their numbers just make for grim, grim reading. The Register had a piece saying, in the storage space, at least for IBM, they are on a long multi-year downward turn, and I mean big style, right? So I think fiscal year 2010, hardware revenues in the storage business were $3.7 billion. Fiscal year 2015, just scraping over $2 billion. Now, okay, in the grand scheme of things at IBM, that's not a lot of money, but I can't get my head around the fact that it's still billions of dollars, so it's big money.
It's a lot of money. Come on. Every little bit hurts when it's a billion.
Oh, flipping heck. Can you imagine that? Hell yeah. How's about this one, though? Class action lawsuit being raised against Nimble Storage. Now, don't want to open us to any issues here, but apparently if you bought shares between pretty much spring and autumn last year, my understanding of it at least is you've got a case that Nimble didn't really tell you how hard the competition was and potentially how bad they were doing. So there's a company out there that's raising a class action lawsuit against them. Interesting. And what else have we got? USA Today saying, another juicy one. EMC stock is currently suggesting VMware tracking stock is worthless. And Citrix.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then Citrix having the activist investors, Elliot, on the board and on their back at the moment. They've just named a new CEO. That's literally hot off the wire, that one. So that's what we've got to talk about. We can throw anything else in that we want, right? Anybody think any of those is particularly juicy that they want to tackle first?
Whoa, where to even start with that? I think the sky's falling, right? Are we going to be able to be on next week? I mean, is Skype even going to continue to work next week to record these?
Hell yeah.
It barely worked this week.
It barely, yeah, based on our pre-call.
So Skype's barely working, right? IBM is turning billions of dollars downwards in revenue. Hortonworks are down 20%. The market's apparently not good for tech IPOs at the moment. I think we know that. So Puppet are not looking to IPO.
The market's down 15% across the board, too. So, you know, some of that could be just that the market's down.
It could be, yeah. So that's what Mark's saying, isn't it? Is the sky falling? It's the podcast.
Thanks for raising rates there, ass clowns.
Well, it's the oil prices that are really doing it to us. Yeah,
that and the global recession that's coming.
Right. Well, again. Yeah. The right, oil yeah. prices being lowest they've ever not ever been, but been in like 30 years or something. And
yeah, I still paid $4 a gallon in Los Angeles just the other day.
Not me. $1.45 yesterday.
$0.85.
Temperatures going up. Cost of oil going down. Economic activity in the tank. The sky's falling.
Tell you what, I'm going out in the garden tomorrow and I'm felling trees and building an ark. And you can laugh as much as you want.
Captain Trips is right around the corner.
Oh. Are you gonna name that ark Docker?
Yeah, put a big whale on the side of it. So I tell you what, why don't we take this one first then? So Hortonworks, right? Shares are down over 20%. They're looking to raise another $100 million, right, via a secondary stock offering, literally, right, about a year after their IPO, their initial public offering, right? I'm pretty sure I read that it was December 2014 that they IPO'd. Now, Hortonworks are a fairly big name, I would say, in the Hadoop space and the big data analytics, and we seem to think that this is a growing market and one that's got a bright future, right? But, I mean, it generally is accepted as negative by the market if you go back for a secondary stock offering, right? Especially so soon after your IPO. So is this potentially, am I reading more into this, right? Is this just Hortonworks specific here? Maybe are they too early to the market? Is the market really not growing like we thought it would?
There's just no money in big data.
Well, I mean, no, seriously, I mean, that's a question there. Is that the case?
Yeah, look at the three main competitors. You have Cloudera,
yeah.
Took $1 billion in funding. You had Hortonworks, it took like $250 million before IPO. You got MapR, that's taken $110 million or whatever. So Cloudera revenue, they were claiming back in November, was right over $100 million unaudited total revenue over the course of 2014. And then you had Horton basically saying that they had about $33 million in revenue based prior to their going public around the same kind of time frame. I haven't really seen any numbers from MapR. Obviously, you know, Cloudera has a big war chest, but Horton beat everybody else to market with an IPO and an exit for their investors. And then you have MapR, who's kind of like on the fringes, and you know, they have a good problem. I'm not saying any one of these, you know, one is bigger than the other, but the thing is, the challenge here is that there is a lot of hype around big data and its usefulness, and it's not necessarily paying out for the people that have the deep pockets to deploy it and implement it properly, or it's only paying off for a small segment or niche piece of the market, and therefore there's not enough money being generated for these companies to all three exist.
Do you think a lot of these analytics plays that big companies are doing, I mean, obviously that requires a lot of data, big data, if you will, but they're not necessarily implementing things like Hadoop, Cloudera to do it. It's kind of its own analytics engine. Does that affect it?
No, I see tons of people implementing Hadoop. Mm-hmm. But almost half the time, it's like, yeah, we got a 10-node or a 20-node Hadoop cluster that we're doing some testing or some playing around with. And then I go into some of the larger telco spaces and some of these, you know, really big players. And, you know, I've seen numbers bandied around. Yeah, we spent $150 million on our big data thing and it didn't turn up anything. So we just kind of canned it.
Though, Gabriel? Do you know, does anybody have a grasp of whether or not this stuff is actually doing viable good things for businesses that are kicking the tires with it?
We should probably have Robert Novak on at one point to talk about that, because that's a space he plays around in pretty exclusively, and he's probably got a better finger on the pulse of that ecosystem than I do. It's just one of yet another technology that I have to keep abreast of and keep my finger on the pulse of it tangentially, but not too deep.
Why aren't we seeing these fantastic case study numbers, right? Does anybody know of any of these things that have gone really great? Has anybody seen, like, you know, anybody talking about how this did this at this company and that did that related to any of these products?
I just don't see it. Yeah, I think part of it, though, is that the stuff that they're doing is, like, we can't tell you about that because that'll tip off somebody who competes against us.
Well, there's some of
that. I think there's a lot of that, and I think the whole thing around big data is to dive deeper into your, you know, this big pool of unstructured crap that you have floating around and delineate some trends. It just may not be mature enough to show any true value, and that traditional BI business intelligence products that have been doing this for a lot longer and maybe are a little more streamlined and a little more tailored to individual organizations are still beating them out.
I kind of buy what you're saying there, Gabriel, but you know these vendors very badly need to have, you know, they very wins. Badly need to show that this stuff is working and really paying back dividends, right? So a customer could, you know, potentially say, we use this stuff to analyze our, you know, internal operations of this sort or another, supply chain or, you know, any number of things they could say that would be vague enough that nobody would really know what they were doing with it or how it was working. I mean, they could do this vaguely and they could say, you know, and we cut this thing to 10% of what used to be or something like that, right? We're not seeing anything. And I wouldn't say it's crickets because there's a level of noise out there, but I mean, we're just not seeing proof.
Well, yeah. And then I'm still waiting for some of these other acquisitions to pay off. I mean, remember Hitachi bought Pentaho? Like last year, have you heard anything about that since then? And it wasn't like they paid like $5 for it.
Yeah, like Hitachi is so good at doing M&A.
Yeah, but...
Sorry, Greg.
I said it, not you, Gabriel.
Yeah.
Aside from those three startups that we mentioned, right, are any of the big players, I know IBM, you know, dabbling in this space and what have you, are any of the big players really making a loud noise about it or anything? Because when we look at other spaces, right, like all flash storage and things like that, I think it was a lot easier to see that there was a real market being carved there. There was a lot of noise and, you know, total opposite of what we're saying about this. There's just not that noise.
Visible adoption, proof of adoption.
Yeah, yeah. We're not seeing it, right? So
we're not.
What, are we just too early or is this stuff too hard as well?
I think we're in the trough of disillusionment still, according to Gartner.
Oh, you have to quote Gartner, don't you?
Yeah. I did, yeah.
I'm going to go.
Yeah.
No, but I think that's
being
fairly
the Gartner
apt, right?
champion I mean, again.
Yeah.
You know, you have all kinds of companies that have sprouted up around this, you know, from Cask to, you know, MetaDapper. I mean, the names are amazing. I love startup names. I mean, one of these days we're going to have to play startup or pharmaceutical.
Let's start a company called Flogger.
Docker Flocker.
Not Flocker, just Flogger.
That could go a lot of different ways. Get yourself a nice good
Flogger. I got to grog all this crap into my head because I can't figure it all out.
This will be interesting. This will be an interesting space to watch to see whether not, you know, is Hortonworks the, you know, are they the first indication that it's not working out? Are the other guys going to follow suit? What else is going on here, right? Or not? The fact that they go get money again means that, you know, they did their IPO. They thought they were going to, at some point, they thought they were going to be profitable. And it's like, ooh, short, you know, and probably way short. You know, you have to have money somewhere to pay employees, so they have to go get more.
Yeah, but I also think this space is tough to implement because I think you have a bunch of legacy data analytics tools that they're trying to merge and get to work with some of the new technologies out there, and they're still having a hard time getting all that stuff to merge and get together. It's just, I think it's a lack of complete maturity within the space that's causing some of this chaos. And some of this is, you know, maybe they're too soon to market, and now they're seeing the growing pains of not having the kind of run rate revenue that will allow them to be successful, and they got to go take another, you know, they got to go ask dad for another bank loan, you know, or a bump in their allowance.
Hey, speaking of bank loans, is that a good segue onto the puppet piece?
Oh, I would say so, since you just put that together.
I don't know. As long as nobody else has anything to say on that, we can switch gears.
Do we want to mention Spark at all? There has been a lot of hoopla there, but I don't really know much about it.
Go for it, Lauren. Do it.
Well, I don't know that I have enough to say about it, really, but I know Spark just won, you know, InfoWorld 2016 whatever technology award, and, you know, there's big Spark versus Hadoop debates, which I don't think Spark does everything Hadoop can do. I don't know if it's fully qualified big data or more on that analytics route. But, you know, Spark might be something to watch if we're really saying, you know, is big data dying? Maybe that's the company to watch now.
Yeah, maybe it's just getting crushed by open source Spark.
Yeah, because is Spark the Apache project?
Yes.
Yes.
Right. I heard that that's like really complicated as well. This stuff all seems really complicated and almost lacking. I don't want to make like a Docker analogy particularly here, but like the stuff for containers was around in the Linux kernel for quite a while, right? And it just was lacking that kind of way to wrap it and bundle it all together and distribute it easily and be able to spin it up dead easily.
It was lacking that spark. Oh,
well, it's almost brilliant. Like the OpenStack story, right? I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah?
Just kind of the everything's too complicated for it to really catch on type of story, you know?
Uh-huh. Maybe it's just too complicated for us storage people.
Well, that is possible. and our network person. Yeah.
That's why you had to move on to Docker and containers, Nigel.
So easy, man. For a small brain like mine, yeah. So let's talk about this Puppet piece as well, though. I'm interested in your take on it, Mark, seeing as how you're Mr. DevOps these days, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
No, anyway, so there was a lot of talk last year about Puppet aiming for a potential IPO sometime around the spring this year. And now they're saying, and I think we get this right, that, you know, unless you're turning a good profit, it's maybe not the greatest time to IPO as a tech company, right? But they've gone and taken a $22 million loan from a bank, right? So debt financing, yeah? Now, just a little bit of background that I got off of Crunchbase, right? So far, Puppet Labs have had 6 rounds of funding in a total of 7 years, right? And in total, they've taken $85.5 million, which over 7 years, you know, is not a lot of money compared to some people. But instead of going and taking more investor cash, they've taken a bank loan. And I don't know. I think like in the 70 episodes that we've done in this podcast, okay, so there will have been other companies that have taken bank loans, but I don't think we've ever featured one of them saying, you know, hey, here's a startup that's actually taken a bank loan instead of another round.
Borrowing money is cheaper than, you know, has defined timetable on paying back, and you can kind of stretch debt out a little bit longer. And, you know, as long as you're making your payment, your minimum monthly credit card payment, the bank isn't going to bother you. Your investors might.
Right. And you get that bank loan, and what you pay back is interest. When you take money from a VC, you give them equity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And after 6 rounds or 7 rounds, was it? Well, how many rounds was it, Nigel?
6 rounds in 7 years.
After 6 rounds, they might just be thinking, you know what? The equity is thin enough. Mm-hmm. Here, let's find another way to do it. But, you know, maybe they got a CFO in there too that just said, you know, it's good to spread this stuff around and have different types of debt. Where else can we pile up debt?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you know, interest rates are low, dude.
Interest rates are low.
I mean, that's why you see, you know, everybody else. You know, I mean, people are making acquisitions. They're not cutting a check. They're funding it.
Well, I'll tell you what else is low. So according to Puppet, right? They reckon that only 15% of the market is using any kind of automation at the moment. So if that is the case, right, and we're all going to be doing more
that
automation in the future.
Seems really low.
Well, so I thought that at first. But I wonder, you know, in a lot of, especially the bigger organizations, right, some of their old school stuff, then, you know, a lot of the companies that I've worked for and with, they are not automating a lot of the stuff. There's so many silos. There's so much, you know, Excel spreadsheet stuff going on and manual process, all of this kind of stuff. So at first I was thinking, you know what, 15% of the market, if that is right, yeah, look, let's say it's 30%, okay? It's still a big market to tap into. There's still 70% there. But when I started to think about it, I was thinking, well, if that is the case, and I'm trying to think, you know, the kind of companies I've worked with in the past, the stuff that's not automated at the moment, I've got to tell you, it would be hard to automate. So, you know, on the one side of the coin, you see, well, 15%, so there's another, what is that, 85% potential there?
Hey, now,
maths, yeah? Boom. But, it's that kind of low-hanging fruit, isn't it? The easy stuff has maybe been done and the net new stuff. but it doesn't necessarily go that the other 85% is even automatable, if that's a word. Am I making sense there?
Well, and how do you qualify automation, too? I mean, it can be anything from a script some network engineer made or VMware, whoever, whatever engineer, to, you know, a full-blown cloud orchestration tool, you know.
True.
Yeah, what was the definition they were using? I mean, because it's like, God, even if you're using PowerShell, that's some kind of automation to a certain extent. It just seems strange to me that they would peg that number so low. Maybe it's just because of the types of customers I talk to on a daily basis. I mean, automation is like one of the key tenets that comes up in almost every discussion I have, and especially within partners that are a little more technically adept in the channel space. I mean, I did a presentation for a fairly robust one today. They have an entire automation practice group.
But if you think about it, like the entire data center, like the network is not automated at all. I mean, basically, right? That's why we have software-defined networking becoming so popular. So, yeah, if you take into account the entire data center, what can be automated, all that 15% seems like it could be a...
Oh, yeah, I can believe it. It's just the other 85% is, well, a lot of it sounds like it's rock hard to automate, in my humble opinion.
Or markets that won't, right?
Right.
How much of that is, you know, represents enterprise and how much is small and medium-sized business, where, especially in a small business, automation will probably never be a thing. Right. It's either going to go to services or, you know, they're going to hire somebody that does this stuff and they just do it. It's not of the scale that requires automation.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're going to spend more time trying to automate it than it would to do it once a year or whatever.
Right.
Exactly. Cure is worse than a disease. I'm not saying that about automation in general, but, you know, there's got to be segments. Yeah. In some cases. Yeah.
Hey, you know, saying that the market is not particularly great for tech IPOs and stuff at the moment. Did you guys hear of Atlassian's IPO, I think, just about a month or so ago?
Yeah, Atlassian. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they need some props there. We've not mentioned this at all. So Atlassian, the Australian company behind, like, Bitbucket and Confluence and what have you, right? So they raised over $450 million in their IPO just a month or so ago. And check this out, right? After being profitable for every single quarter since 2002. I mean, hats off there.
Yeah, I didn't even realize they were that old.
Yeah.
Well, but I also think that's a testament to how hard it is to build a good, solid company and have the kind of IPO exit that we would attribute with success. Uh-huh. You know, I don't know where things went weird in the last couple of years where it was like, oh yeah, you bring a product to market, you sell it for a year and boom, profit or IPO.
Yeah.
You know what else? It shows that you can be really successful and not have to spend much money on marketing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because like a lot of people don't know
spend
who
much
they
money, period. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, there's so much, it seems like sometimes there's so much of a rush to find this big payout. And I'm like, what happened to kind of building a solid, steady business in a dedicated run rate and being cash flow positive or close to it?
Because VCs aren't interested in that.
Well, yeah.
They like unicorns.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's just it. The whole unicorn culture. I mean, they're all going to get ground up and turned into unicorn meat pretty soon.
Anyway, I have taken my hat off to Atlassian. Profitable every quarter for like 13 years, and they raised over $450 million, right? And as part of the article that I read, they made over 100 millionaires within that company. So that's how to do it, in my opinion. Well done.
Well, that's fantastic. I should have been working for some companies like
heck
that.
Yeah. So let's go on to this USA Today piece, right? Saying basically the VMware tracking stock is worthless. Well, what's the story behind this? Because I've not read this one.
Yeah, reality slaps Michael Dell in the face. That's what that is.
Whatch.
Yeah.
Did anybody read the piece?
Let me go back and read it real quick. No, I mean, I think, you know, this is one of those things where it's like, I'm no financial wizard. So it's hard to really understand some of the dynamics around the tracking stock to begin with and how that was structured. And you almost think it was kind of like this sleight of hand parlor trick to get the deal kind of bought off on. And then, you know, what I don't think they anticipated was the massive drop in, you know, EMC price shares as well as VMware shares that probably have affected and caused part of this.
Oh, yeah.
Part of this, too, is that the whole stock market is just taking a plunging right now. And, you know, you could analyze, you know, any number of companies individually when in fact is this is, you know, this is the tide going way out.
You look at VMware stock over the course of the last year tracking it from a high of 91.14 to today's low of right around $49.
That's brutal.
That's a big haircut.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
That brings up an interesting point, right? When you do these big deals and it's dependent on stock market performance, you know, what happens when the whole market takes a big downturn like this? I mean, the deal's set, and the assumption is made that the market will maintain some level of stability. But when that stability erodes across the market, like it has in the last few weeks, right, these deals just all turn upside down and look wonky. This isn't the only one that's going to look funny. The SanDisk Western Digital deal has to look pretty weird too.
Yeah. Well, and same thing with the Veritas one. I mean, this affects a lot of different players in the space. And then all of a sudden you're going to have a bunch of investors jump in and try to play arbitrage games.
It'll be a good time to be an attorney.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a bunch of lawsuits. But I think also maybe it goes back to the point that Dell didn't have the financial ducks in a row to get this deal done to begin with. And by offering these kind of alternate financial vehicles that were a little more risky and a little more challenging, that it was going to put the deal at jeopardy. And so, you know, they had to go pull all of these rabbits out of hats, and, you know, and then you have weird things like the VirtuString deal that muddy up everything and cause confliction and challenges. I mean, is this deal just too big to it's not too big to fail. And I think that's part of the challenge here. They just don't have the money to execute this smoothly.
So let's say the deal goes through, right, and everything happens and the tide goes out big style on the stock market, right? And Dell are up to their eyeballs in debt, okay? And the market plunges. And
wait, Dell's still up to their eyeballs in debt from going private.
Right. One way or another, they're going to come out of this up to their eyeballs in debt.
They just changed the name to debt.
Yeah. But is there a scenario where things get, you know, so bad that, you know, there could be no more Dell? They don't come through it.
No. I don't think that's
the really?
I mean, come on, the E's at an angle. How can you get rid of that?
We've lost big companies in the past.
Well, I mean, they're already doing selling off parts of their company. I mean, I'm sure they can still strip some more, right?
We had a couple weeks ago, I mean, I'm seeing people that have worked at EMC for, you know, for a while. Layoffs are coming through, right? And they kind of couch a lot of that. Like, well, we do that every year. And I'm like, not to this extent, you know. And I'm seeing some people leave EMC that were like, I would have considered to be completely safe. You know, obviously, you know, that's a case by case basis in certain instances, but it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, gosh, sure seems like it's like EMC is laying people off. There's rumors about IBM. HP is always doing something. This seems like there's a lot of people that are in the tech industry that are kind of like, you know, especially during a downturn, a financial downturn, boy, things, the belt tightening comes in and things get really risky.
You can only go so far with analogies like, you know, natural selection and stuff, right? Because these companies don't procreate, but they do f- things up. And this could be one of those great f- ups that just, you know, that has the perfect storm of arrogance and bad timing and external elements that, Nigel, you might be onto something here, right? I mean, we think of Dell as being this big company, you know, with these resources that can do all these things, but they may have flown too close to the sun, you know, using another metaphor.
Icarus.
The thing might just burn up and fall to pieces. Yeah, let's bring the gods in. American gods.
By the way, that was an amazing book recommendation. I've got 5 more hours left on that thing.
Okay, so I haven't started it yet, so don't give anything away.
American gods. It is a great book.
It is really good. It is really good. Hey, just another one on this line. So I was reading that article, and Symantec will now receive $1 billion less cash.
Oh yes, I saw that. Yeah,
$1 billion
out of $8 billion projected, right?
Yeah, that's bonkers.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Like, take away the chairs, and you know,
You no more Herman Miller for you, or whatever the Arion chairs. You got to go get those plastic ones at the junior high that are just big enough.
That's one of those things that the management team, you know, that's spinning that out, right? All of a sudden, it is an enormous crisis for them, right? They have been trying to figure out, you know, how to structure this business and put all these plans in place. And when you come up $1 billion short, you have to change everything.
Oh, yeah.
Those aren't small adjustments. That's like backbreaking adjustments.
Man, it's a miserable podcast this week.
Oh, God, this is depressing.
It is depressing.
People, hey, spend money, guy, everybody. Yeah. Buy some big data, would you?
Yeah. Let's try and see if between the four of us we can bolster the whole market up, yeah, with some positive spiel. Not happening. Hey, so how's about this for positive as well, or not? So, securities class action lawsuit against Nimble. I'm not sure that I fully understand this.
Right. Where are we going now? Oh, from depressing to...
I know. Oh. I don't want anybody self-harming on the podcast or anybody listening, right? Or just veering their car off the road into the nearest tree they can find because the news is so miserable. But yeah, I mean, tell me if I've got this wrong, right? Apparently, if you bought shares in Nimble between, what was it, spring and autumn last year, apparently you've got a case against them that, if I'm reading it right, they were not as truthful as maybe they should have been on how challenging business was for them and how hard the market was. I'm not sure I quite get this. And I guess a second question around this is, does this thing happen very often? Or I think it's the first time I can remember hearing of it.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions around this too. So I thought it read that, you know, between autumn and whatever, last year, 2014 or whatever, I end up living in Northern California. Is that right, too?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's what it said. And then the reasons listed were really interesting to me because I feel like every company lies about this kind of thing.
What?
So I had to restart my computer, so I no longer have the...
This is not the official line of the In Tech We Trust podcast, by the way, that every company lies about this kind of stuff. But no,
of course not. And nor am I representing my company. Oh, yeah. But yeah, I'm trying to find.
So, you know, what it amounts to, right, is every deal that's done and every investment that's made and every underwriter that talks about a stock. And it's all about there's risk involved, right? There's elements of risk. And, you know, when somebody doesn't make well, Nimble stock folded, right? It got beat down by, you know, 50% or something like that. It was a pretty good sized drop. That is risk. You know, you invest in stocks, you take on risk, right? And so the question is, were they really deceptive, or were they just incompetent, right? And I think the idea of the lawsuit is that they were deceptive. They lied about it. I think in Nimble's case, it was a competency problem. I think they really took their eyes off where that business needed to go. They didn't really take Pure seriously, you know, and they didn't understand the need for All Flash, which they still don't have. And, you know, I think they misunderstood the market. And I think they spent money doing things that haven't given them the return that they thought they were going to get.
But how can you have a lawsuit off of that? Surely any company can make those kind of mistakes.
I think this is a bogus lawsuit is what I'm saying. Yeah. I think it's a bullshit lawsuit.
The thing
lawsuit.
Is there's so many people. I mean, you look at it, there's like, you know, everybody and their mother is jumping in to jump on that class action lawsuit. It could just be, you know, the muddy in the water. I mean, but we look at Nimble's product. I mean, you know, a lot of people copied a lot of the stuff that they'd put out to a certain extent. They had good margins. They were making, you know, relatively, you know, their numbers weren't horrible, you know, but then again, sometimes you just get caught up in sentiment.
That's a great point, Gabriel. I mean, the stock price, you could say overreacted to their, right, to their numbers, right? So they're getting published to a consensus that overreacts to something. How can you punish a company legally for something that's based on, you know, herd behavior that the company's not responsible for? I mean, the suit is
like the first reason listed is that they failed to disclose that Nimble was being negatively impacted by intense competition from well-entrenched large competitors who are slashing prices in order to maintain market share. I mean, just marketing, what? Like, isn't that what every company does? Is that we lie about how much better we are than our competitors? Or not necessarily lie, damn, maybe we all right. believe it. But that is what every company does. I mean, that's just marketing.
Well, and the storage industry's, you know, been renowned for like a list price. Really? That's a joke.
Uh-huh.
You know, does anybody know what the price of a product is? We've had a lot of discussions about that. Robin Harris kind of makes a quarter of his living off trying to expose that stuff.
Yeah, so the second one is Nimble Storage had made a conscious decision to focus its sales and marketing efforts towards the large enterprises market to reduce sales efforts in the U.S. commercial market. And three, due to this change in sales strategy and the intense price competition, Nimble Storage was losing sales in both channels. This is from Yahoo Finance, by the way. But yeah, I mean, that those reasons seem ridiculous to me. I feel like every company does this, and I don't know how you can be sued for it.
No, it does sound bogus. I think we're...
I think you could look at the readiness of their product to be sold in enterprises. And I think you could look at the management team there and say, you thought this product could do better than it did, but it can't.
Right.
It didn't have the characteristics that enterprise decided that they wanted, one of which was all flash. Right. And it's like, damn. Yeah. If the market moved to all flash, which the enterprise market has done to a large degree, and if you don't have it, that's not going to work. And I don't know that you can sue a company for making that mistake. They just f***ed up.
Yeah, the product just didn't work. I mean, that's the gamble you take, right?
It did not. They did not have the feature set that people said was the bottom line of what they needed. And the thing about competition from entrenched competitors dropping price, it's not entrenched competitors. It's everybody. Mm-hmm. It's the whole world decided you can go in and buy business. And I think I've talked about it in this podcast in the past. I've never seen a time before when you could go in on a deal and win it in the last 30 days. You don't have to harvest deals. You don't have to find a customer and bring them along, because all you have to do is get in the way of a closing within like 30 days of closing, and you can steal the deal. And everybody's playing that way. Well, maybe not everybody, but quite a few are.
It comes back to, and we've talked about this before, the customer has to do their due diligence to figure out what's the best solution for them, or what's the best platform for them. So if it didn't have certain functionality, like for instance all flash, like that's, yeah, okay, so that they should know that, you know, they should be comparing different storage and figure it out before they have to file a lawsuit about it, you know.
Yeah, high performing flash is, it's not a commodity, but it's getting to that point. And Nimble, for one reason or another, did not get all flash, and that's been brutal for them.
So switching on to a company that may be getting all flash, as in grokking, HDS, purpose-built all-flash array, the HFS A-series, so the Hitachi Flash System, I think, A-series, an entry-level box aimed at the likes of Pure & Company. Is this an interesting play? Is this something that's going to threaten Pure? Are they taking a different angle to other people? Is there anything to talk about here?
So we all know that Hitachi has traditionally not been a marketing juggernaut,
mm-hmm.
to put it lightly.
Oh, yeah.
But they make very good, solid products, and they don't release crap,
mm-hmm.
and they don't get over their ski tips, and they have a fairly large and dedicated technology following. And I think that they can go into their existing customer base and be fairly successful with this all-flash offering, because on its face, it looks like a very nice solution, right? It's got all the check marks. It may be late to the market in terms of disrupting and leading, but it's going to be a product that they can go out and just slam into a lot of customers and make money on.
But is this a fit for their existing customers? Because aren't their existing customers like generally large enterprises?
No, it's a perfect fit for their existing customers, because those guys are all looking at Pure and everything else and EMC and others, because Hitachi didn't have a play, or the play they did have just wasn't, you know, one was never allocated and provisioned into the traditional you know, Gartner and analyst quadrants. I mean, even IDC didn't include them with the thing that they had before. So they needed something that was AKA dedicated to the market so that they could get the same, you know, buzz and generation and awareness. But also, you know, they kind of had to do it on their own terms. And it looks like it's something they built in-house and they didn't have to go out and buy something. And, you know, they look more long-term strategically than they do quick return.
This market is like a pie where the pie has been cut up into like 12 pieces or whatever. And now every piece is swollen and they no longer fit together, right? And it's actually the pie hasn't swollen. It's that the pie tin that the pieces are supposed to fit in is getting smaller, I think, right? And Hitachi coming in here, it's late. They will be able to protect their own space. They will be able to compete more, you know, to try to, you know, eat into everybody else's stuff. You know, they compete with EMC and HP and the whole thing, right? It's, I think they've got a decent product. I don't see it taking market share from anybody else. I think this is a far too competitive business. And, you know, to Gabriel's point, they don't market. So, yeah, the people that know about them, they'll look at it and they'll be able to use it to get bigger discounts on other people's products.
So I'm going to say, even though pies and swelling and tins and I'm like, huh?
Sorry right. about that. You might have to edit that shit out.
What flavor is the pie?
It's a meat pie, Nigel. Does that help?
Meat pie. All right.
Pie.
No, I got where you were going, Mark. I do think it looks like it's exactly what we would expect from Hitachi, right? They've done it their way, like you say, but we don't expect them to blow the market away or start tearing things up with it, right? It'll be a solid product, but yeah, okay. One last story, last but not least. Unless we talk about, we've got Hot or Not after this, right? So let's keep this brief because I'm looking forward to Hot or Not. And it won't be hard to keep brief. Dell announces network operating system version 10. I don't know why I'm laughing. A Linux-based network play. And I just have to ask the question, why? I mean, what is the point of this stuff, right? Are they aiming to win business off of Cisco today? Or is this like a long-term software-defined networking play? And are they seriously expecting to be a major player in the growing software-defined networking market? What is the deal with something like this? Because I don't see it at all.
I think it's a little bit of everything that you mentioned. It's customer demand. It's trying to fight that white box market share, which I think is only like 1 or 2% of the market share anyway.
Right, so 2% of market share. Customer demand, so are we saying that Dell Networking has customers?
I'm speaking generally. And disclaimer, I do work for Cisco.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But yeah, and so, you know, Cisco came out with our version of the Linux based switches a year ago or longer. And it basically lets you do everything you can do on a Linux server, let's say, on the switch. So there's a lot of customization. This can be helpful, of course, with the software-defined networking and going more that route in the future.
Well, okay, so real quick, how big is that for Cisco? Like tiny, super tiny, or super, super tiny? And is it a long-term play? Just to get my head around this, yeah?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a long-term play that goes towards the software-defined networking. So, yeah, that market share is really small right now. I forget what we said. Didn't we say, like, 3% or something on a few podcasts ago?
Yeah, it does ring a bell, yeah.
But, so it's small right now, but it's growing, you know, every quarter. And, of course, that's what, you know, Cisco ACI and VMware NSX are counting on, that continues to grow. Even, you know, things like OpenFlow, if people want to do it themselves in kind of a more open manner, then this kind of Linux-based switching will help. You can do things like put containers on it, Nigel, which I think that's exciting.
There you go.
For you.
It's the future then. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So if you're just quiet for a second, Lauren, I want to hear if you're shaking in your boots at the sound of this. No, I'm not hearing anything. No. So it's not going to be big. All right, then. Should we move on to Hot or Not?
Yep.
Yeah.
So we've got two Hot or Nots this week. Lauren, you've got one, and Mark, you've got one. Who wants to go first?
Oh, Mark, boy. You take it away. Age before beauty.
Nailed. Okay, so Matt Brender had an interesting tweet. Matt is one of the three hosts of the Geek Whisperers podcast and a terrific social guy. Really fun to hang out with. Lots of love to Matt. Anyway, he wrote this thing about how he's moving to off of WordPress and using static site generation stuff with markdown language and these kinds of things for blogging. And Matt is into Matt's into code, and you can do things. I don't know if it's Python or what you do these with, but there are these new, I don't even know if I should call them frameworks or what, but these, you know, static site generation stuff. Like GitHub has one called Jekyll. There's one called Gitbook, Octopress, other things, Ghost. And so the question is this stuff, you know, a thing? And maybe, but if I called it a thing, that would be stealing somebody else's mojo. The Software Defined Talk podcast talks about is something a thing or not. But the question is this hot or not? Are bloggers going to move into the area where they become coders and they start using more, the techniques of coding and automation and scripting and all of that? Or are people just going to continue to use, you know, something like WordPress? Let's just say it. WordPress is the default blog winner. So the question is, static site generation using markdown language, hot or not?
I think that for programmers, it'll be hot, and for everyone else, probably not.
I'll go not, because I don't know, about 6 months ago, Scott Lowe had a blog piece that I read, and it was really interesting, actually, and I wanted to have a conversation with him on the comments thread, and I was looking for the comments thread, and I'm like, can't find it. So I ping him on Twitter, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this really cool thing where, like, you know, I build my blog site myself, and I'm kind of learning as I go, so it'll get built out as he gets better with whatever jiggery-pokery that is, right?
Jiggery-pokery.
Yeah. And at that point, there was no comments feature on his blog. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not having a pop at Scott here. He's great, and his content is great and what have you, but I couldn't engage with him and have a conversation. And I was like, man, that kind of sucks. So for me, no, not hot.
You're just supposed to talk to him over, like, GitHub or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know, but I'm a bit old-fashioned, right? I like the... I mean, okay, we're moving away from blogs and all that, right? Yeah, but I do like the traditional blog with a comment section below where you can engage in a conversation with someone and it's relevant to what the article was about. I like that. So for me, no, not hot.
Yeah, so it's super hot if you want to learn how all this crap interconnects and plays with, and that's what you are paid to do as a developer advocate and understand what you're actually talking about. Or if you're new to programming, or if you're just bored and want to just change stuff up and create these static pages through all these different tools that they leverage. For somebody like myself who just wants to write and submit, it's so not hot. It doesn't even exist, right? Because it's like, I'm not going to tear down everything that's already there and modular, and I can, you know, download plugins and all these other things, and it works. And there's really no, I just want something that I can write and then publish. I don't want to have to spend the next 6 months of my life learning the intricacies of how these different independent things work, because it's just not what I do on a day-to-day basis. If it was something that was, like, you know, pressing for me to really kind of grasp a lot of the stuff, and then for Scott and for Matt, those are things that are on their radar, and they do want to get that super nerd knob twisty deep integration understanding of all that stuff. But for a lot of people, and I'm going to say that's probably like 99.9% of people who want to blog, they're not going to do this.
What do you think, Mark?
I hate to say it, but I agree with everybody. Yeah. As much as I like this, I mean, I think Gabriel nailed it. Who's going to use this? People that want to access and do things on GitHub.
Yeah, and back to your thing, Nigel. I mean, I remember when he did it, when he first started working on it, and I went to tweet a link to the editor, and it didn't work at all. And I'm like, hey, you know, by the way, I just sent him a DM. I'm like, hey, your tweet, the link thing doesn't work. He's like, oh yeah, I gotta build that module. And I'm like, wow, yeah. That's awesome that you can do that, because I can't. But yeah, it's like, I got other stuff to do.
Sorry, I brought it up. I mean, I like it. Here's the thing. I like it a lot, right? I think it's really a fun thing to think about, but I got to say, it's not hot. I mean, just.
And the thing is, right, so those guys are going to massively benefit from the experience of doing that, and their careers will rip on as a result, yeah? but man, it doesn't help your readers and stuff like that in the meantime. So, yeah. Anyway, Lauren, you've got one for us, don't you?
Yeah, so the old beloved AOL, America Online, is thinking about changing its name, basically because they're afraid that their branding is mostly that people think that they're an email company exclusively, when actually, you know, they own Huffington Post and I think TechCrunch and a bunch of other companies that kind of create content, basically, and create news. So what do you guys think? They're not set on changing the name yet, and they don't have a name that I know of in mind. So what do you guys think? Hot or not, should AOL change its name?
Are they going to change to Alphabet Junior?
Netflix
Alphabet
too?
Online?
They'll change it to numbers, because Google has Alphabet.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
You know what? I think, generally speaking, renaming and rebranding a company is just not hot, because I don't know if you were good or good enough or like super awesome at what you did, you wouldn't need to do it. The fact is, they pretty much suck as a company these days. But they, I ought to be careful what I say here. But no, I think
that's a big company.
They blow goats.
They do.
Just say it, Nigel.
So I don't think they're an email company. I think they're like a dial-up internet service provider. I still imagine them as being on 56K. But no, the fact is, if what they were doing, you know, the pivots that they've made, if they were tearing it up, there would be no need for this. The fact is, they're kind of like, meh, who cares about them anymore? So, yeah, tell you what, let's go and rebrand it, and suddenly everything that we do will be super amazing now. No, not hot for me.
Yeah, so not hot. So not
Mark?
Relevant.
I think it's hotter than hell because it's going to be entertaining. This is like the San Francisco 49ers hiring Chip Kelly, right?
They should change their name to Yahoo, and Yahoo should change their name to AOL.
That would be so hot. What if they just did a name swap?
Yeah. Swap names, and then we'll change up the branding a bit, and yeah.
It's like wife swap. We could send like Marissa Mayer over to AOL and
whoa. Yeah, how about if you just append like AOL to the end of Yahoo? Yahoo-el.
Yahoo.AOL. They should merge, and then they can make the world's largest
company that Nigel doesn't care about.
Largest company that nobody gives a shit about. I can't remember the last time I went to Yahoo.
You went to it today, didn't you? It was one of the articles you submitted.
Nice.
By choice.
And you know what? They've got a really good like answers part of their website that, you know, like if you want to learn how to get grass stains out of white shirts and stuff like that.
Ask Jeeves is making a killing. I have no idea. No. Ask Jeeves anything.
Ask Jeeves or ask Jeeves?
Both.
Ask Jeeves.
Axe
Maybe
Jeeves.
That's what AOL should change their name to is Ass Jeeves.
You know what? It will be interesting actually to see what kind of names people suggest. I bet there'll be some crackers out there.
I have to admit, and I hope no one fires me or anything, I still have my AOL account from when I was 16 years old.
All right, well, we're firing.
Dropped.
And my mom still emails me there.
Oh. Aren't others just great for stuff like that?
Okay, mom, email with mom, hot or not?
It's
Web
hot.
TV. Web TV with mom or grandma. Dude, believe it or not, I bet you anything there's probably more web TV subscribers still active than there are production level big data implementations.
I don't even know what web TV is.
And I don't know what big data is.
I mean, I had dial-up, but...
We might need to use big data to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah.
There we go. We're going to have to ask WebTV.
Ask Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves.
And on that note, I think, thank you everybody for listening. Why you do it, I don't know, week after week, but thank you for doing it. And stickers, I've still got stickers. Gabriel, I will mail you out some of the smaller ones. Hey, Lauren, have you got yours yet?
No, I haven't
arrived yet, man. They should be arriving any day in the post.
Or did you just get a bunch of little discs that look like stickers, but you weren't able to separate the backing from them?
I'm hoping that I get the big dinner plate ones, because
you got a mixture, Lauren. So yeah, I've still got a handful of those small ones that are pre-cut, but are like impossible to peel off the backing.
Yeah.
But the other ones that I've got came on this massive roll, and I had to get my kids to like cut them out, and they've all got like, I mean,
get to work, kiddos.
Yeah.
So if you do get stickers, know that tiny hands.
Yeah, there you
missing
go.
In a little Nigel's little sweatshop.
I think you should sue the sticker manufacturer, Nigel.
For the record, just quick correction, because I had to go look it up real quick. Web TV ceased to exist in 2013, so I might be off of my prediction.
Well, there's probably still subscribers paying in.
Yeah.
No, they actually got converted to MSN dial-up.
Oh, wow.